This is the Unconquered Podcast, unbiased, unrivaled, and unconquered coverage and analysis of Florida State football.
In Florida State,
we won national championships and ACC championships.
It's caught! Touchdown official, Kelvin Benjamin!
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something I can really do this.
Game over! Those are the champions of college football!
You're listening to the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Today on the podcast, we're going to talk to Wayne McGahee again about Florida State's preseason camp as they begin to turn to preparations for Oklahoma State. We'll focus on the defensive side of the football, but without further ado, let's begin. We're joined again by Wayne McGahee. Wayne, good to have you with us. Let's go ahead and get started and talk about the defense here. In particular, you know, one area of concern or minor concern is, you know, they're in Florida State's defense, they've had a number of players to replace, but two of the three linebackers, or one of the two, depending on how you basically look at Florida State's defensive alignment, how you want to list different players, have had to be replaced this year, particularly Christian Green at that outside linebacker, defensive end hybrid, and then Telvin Smith at one of the inside backer positions, and of course then you return Terrence Smith, whose ascendance last year is actually one of the reasons that the defense was sort of kicked it into overdrive after that Boston College game, where they gave up a good number of points and yards in that Boston College game. Then they switched to that basically a hybrid 4-2-5-3-3-5 alignment and brought Terrence Smith onto the field. I may have said Terrence Brooks earlier, but this is a hazard from last year still carrying over. But Terrence Smith came onto the field and really made a difference at that inside backer position. So at least you've got some security blanket there. But what can you say? What have we seen from those other positions, from that hybrid end tackle position or end linebacker position, and then also that other inside backer position? What are we seeing right now?
Well, at the end linebacker position, you're actually seeing a lot of Chris Kasher. I haven't seen him put his hand in the dirt one time all spring all fall practice so far. He's playing standing up, and he seems to be holding down that spot. Today, Jacob Pugh was shadowing him at that spot, so he looks like he's second in line right now behind Kasher, with Thomas and Alegwe out. At the other position opposite of Terrence Smith, it's been a Levenberry and Northrop battle. Jimbo named Levenberry the starter not a week ago, but ever since then, going through walkthroughs, Levenberry hasn't been with the first team, Northrop has. So it's kind of an interesting concept here, because you have what Jimbo says and then you have what we see actually going on. So that battle's still tight.
That's not the only time that we've seen that, and that's certainly not the last time we'll see that. You have to watch what you see as well as what's said. A good example of that just came up today, where Oklahoma, they've been saying that Blake Bell's been only taking snaps at the tight end position, and then it just came out today from other sources that they've not been exactly telling the truth there. And anytime you've got closed practice situations, you know what we see in the warm up or in the preliminary parts of practice, where we're allowed to see that stuff, is what they really want us to see. And, they say what they, what needs to be said in many of these cases. So that said, I do expect Levenberry to ultimately get the majority or the plurality of the snaps at that spot this year early on. I think he's just a little bit more physically talented than Northrop, but Northrop does, carry a load and, hits. He's one of the harder hitters on the team. And showed good instincts on special teams his first couple of years. So, he's no slouch. So he will play in this defense. But I do think Levenberry's extra size is something that they're probably going to want to get on the field, in particular against teams that can run a little bit more up the gut.
Absolutely. I mean, Levenberry is probably 2 to 3 inches taller and weighs about 15 pounds more, although Levenberry has said that Northrop was the hardest hitter on the team. So it's an interesting dynamic there as well. But I definitely think you'll see Levenberry out there most of the time, but Northrop is going to get his reps. I mean, that's just the way the defense is.
And, of course, before Matthew Thomas got hurt, you know, he was really in the mix there, not just at that position, but also in the Chris Kasher role, or, you know, what last year was the Christian Jones position. And, you know, that ankle injury sort of been slowing him up. He's not been dressed the last few practices. But you've got to expect, in particular at that Kasher position, that you're going to see on passing downs especially, you're going to see a good bit of Matthew Thomas as he heals up.
I would expect that. You're definitely going to see him. They like Kasher. It's an interesting when they go into passing downs, you always see Eddie Goldman taking the nose tackle position with Walker and Edwards playing the ends and Kasher standing up. So, I mean, those are big guys, including Kasher. I mean, Kasher's, you know, probably 260 pounds standing up right now. So not only they'll be able to stop the run, but when they go to passing downs, you'll definitely see you're definitely going to see those guys out there.
Yeah, it's interesting, that particular alignment. One of the things that alignment gives you, not just pass rushing ability in terms of explosiveness from that combination. I mean, obviously, Mario Edwards is a stud. Obviously, you know, you've got a little bit extra quickness that you're putting at that nose tackle position with Goldman when you put him in there. And Walker, of course, can really move and has some good size. He's a good pass rusher from that spot. And you know, you've got then Kasher on the outside, but they're also all tall, and they also are all very long. And that's something that Jimbo Fisher really likes to emphasize when it comes time to talk about, you know, what makes a defensive lineman effective and what really bothers quarterbacks. He talks a lot about length and about, you know, a guy like Ricky Leonard, for example, or a guy who's probably going to redshirt this year, but, you know, will be probably a terror in the future, Lorenzo Featherston. Those guys are guys that can get their hands up. And Fisher, you know, recognizes that in today's game, teams, even on passing downs, typically get the ball out a little quicker. So you can't just release guys downfield and say, or release your ends upfield and say, just go get him. And expect the quarterback to still have the ball. What you can do, though, is you can make sure that he's going to have difficulty seeing the field well, that he's going to feel pressured. You know, Fisher's of the view that pressure matters more than sacks at the end of the day. And I think they're gearing that defense that way. That said, I'm still a little skeptical on the Chris Kasher side. I know you are as well. I'm just not sure that once, you know, Oligwe is available and once Thomas is more healed up on that ankle, that we won't see more of those guys stepping in those roles, in particular in the pass rush settings.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Kasher's been in the doghouse lately, and
but he's DeMarcus still out Walker, there.
He's probably still there. I mean, he's constantly there. But DeMarcus Walker has really been, you know, he's impressed me. You know, last year I thought that he played well. He kind of got forgotten after the Pittsburgh game. He didn't really make too big of an impact last season, but he really impressed me with how much he's grown from the spring practice to the fall practice. And he was playing. He was actually standing up and playing in the role Chris Kasher was, not last, you know, like three practices ago.
Yeah, and that actually brings up another point that they have been showing a good bit more of that jumbo five man defensive line odd front that they showed at the beginning of last year as well. It's really actually almost a throwback to the old 5-2 Oki fronts back in the 1980s, 70s and 80s, where you'd see you'd see basically five defensive linemen up on the line of scrimmage, backed by two linebackers who could really, you know, cover sideline to sideline, and it's a way to get a lot more size on the field and basically you're limiting what teams can do in the running game. Now it seems almost counterintuitive to run that kind of front in today's sort of age of the spread, but they did bring that out last year against Pittsburgh, and they experimented with it through the Boston College game. And ultimately they kind of scrapped it as they eventually moved to more of a nickel package as their base, which I think they're going to end up more of a base nickel team this year anyway, but they have been tinkering a lot with that five man, you know, jumbo front, if you will, where you have, you know, Mario Edwards at 295 pounds standing up on the outside as a hybrid defensive end outside linebacker. You got Casher or 44 on the outside, Walker on the outside, and then you've got Goldman, Lawrence Stample, hit one of his backups, and then Desmond Holland up in there as well at those sort of three interior tackle positions, backed by two linebackers. That's just a gigantic front, and you can see why they may want to do that. But can you talk a little bit about what you've seen there, who's been in different places, and sort of what, if anything, you've heard about what they might be doing in terms of tinkering with that kind of jumbo front again?
Well, Florida State has one of the best secondaries in the country right now, so they're going to depend on them a lot. The jumbo front, they're going through, and you have DeMarcus Walker and Mario Edwards standing up, and then you have Goldman, Stample, and Holland as the down lineman. They really like Holland in this situation because, yeah, he's a little smaller on the smaller side, but he's also very, very quick. He's probably around 285, 290. Which would be considered a huge defensive tackle a couple of years ago at Florida State. But he's very quick. They like him on the edge. And when they go to the three-man fronts with the two big guys on the outside standing up, he's always in there just because he can get upfield and can still play as a 3-4 defensive end.
Yeah, last year what you were seeing is that it was Hicks in that role opposite Mario Edwards. On the other side, standing up in that hybrid position, and teams were able to get to the edge against that front at different points, which is, you know, that's not what you know that's kind of the opposite reason of what you run that defense for. One of the reasons that you want to run an oaky front is to try to prevent teams from being able to get to the edge with length and size, and you know you prevent the offensive line from being able to get to the second level, which allows, if you've got really quick linebackers, that allows those linebackers to make plays, allows them to run free and do more in terms of being able to being able to be clean, basically, is what you're trying to do. And Florida State does have those fluid, almost defensive back-like linebackers. Although, I mean, I think that's the advantage that that Levenberry offers, is that he is really a true linebacker body, though he moves better than most linebackers. So, that said, I'm really curious to see whether or not this ends up being better. A better experiment than what it was last year, because they really did not have a ton of success with that front last year. But they seem to want to go back to it. I think maybe they have a little better personnel than they'd had in the past with it. But I'm interested in how much we see it and who we see it against and how successful that actually winds up being.
You know, I completely agree with that. I will say this. DeMarcus Walker is 10 times the athlete that Dan Hicks was. No offense to Dan Hicks. He was, you know, a true Seminole, but he wasn't the best athlete on the field.
Well, he also had been limited pretty significantly by coming off of the knee injury that he'd had. So in all fairness, I mean, he was not quite the athlete that he had been either.
That's very true. And you also, Mario Edwards had to be a down lineman in that situation. They didn't have the defensive ends to run that with. So now that you've got Walker and Edwards, both huge guys that move very, very well, and you have the bigger guys in the center who also move well. I mean, not Lawrence Stample, I don't know if you remember, but not this past spring game, but two spring games ago, he chased down Devontae Freeman from the backfield, from behind.
Well, I mean, he's a guy that actually played linebacker in high school. So, I mean, you know, he can definitely move. One other thing to think about here is how much they're preparing, you know, some of this stuff in the preseason for teams down the line. I mean, you know, I doubt we'll see as much of that against, say, against an Oklahoma State, where you're going to be in a nickel or a dime package most of the game. But you probably, you know, would see some utility against a Notre Dame, maybe, who might want to run between the tackles a little more, or against a Florida, exactly, or against if you want to go a little further down the line, if you end up playing in Alabama, that may be the sort of package that they want to put on the field against those kinds of teams. And so, you know, that's where preseason camp gives you that chance to tinker and to see if you've got the pieces to do that sort of thing down the line. And like I said, I'm just curious to see what we wind up seeing from that look, and how successful that look actually winds up being. But at any rate, let's go ahead and move forward. We'll transition then to talk some about what we've seen from some of the other positions. There's some interesting lineup changes that today being the first day of really preparing for Oklahoma State. There were some interesting scout team players, for example, and it was interesting to see who was where. So why don't we talk a little bit about that and talk about what's coming forward, what we've got moving forward in terms of the defensive side of the football.
The two really. You know, I won't say surprise. One of them's a surprise. The other one is kind of expected, but you didn't hope for it. Keith Bryant and Jeremy Kerr were both put on the both had on scout team jerseys today. Maven Saunders, another freshman tight end, had on a scout team jersey, but Ryan Izzo, the freshman out of New Jersey, did not have on a scout team jersey. Basically, he is a combination of what Kerr and Saunders are. Saunders has never actually blocked. He was a wide receiver in high school and has never actually done it. Yeah, he definitely runs like it. But watching him, you know, going through the blocking drills is pretty funny because he has no idea what he's doing. But Jeremy Kerr is the complete opposite. He doesn't catch very well. He's not, you know, he's not a fast guy. But he blocks like a sixth lineman. And Izzo is basically the halfway point between both of those. He blocks well, he catches well, he does everything right, and Jimbo absolutely raved about him a couple practices ago. The other one is Keith Bryant. A lot of people had high hopes coming in the spring. He was working in with the ones during spring practice, and then the freshman came. And apparently he didn't put in the work. He didn't have the work ethic over the summer. He's doesn't take coaching well, and right now he's sitting on the scout team.
Well, that could be a good or a bad thing. I mean, if you think about it, because it does say a lot, I think, about the freshman who came in. I mean, that's on the one hand, you want to see the veteran actually step forward and do what he's supposed to do. But on the other hand, you know, that says an awful lot about what you've got with Derek Nnadi and Christmas in particular, also Arthur Williams. You know, these guys are going to be, you know, pushing for time early, and they came in ready and maybe more ready than somebody like Bryant expected. And, you know, that's where this team has gotten, is that, you know, if you don't prepare, if you don't play the way that you're supposed to, the way that you're expected to, they've gotten back to where there's going to be somebody else who will. And I think that's what, you know, basically you see. The question is going to be whether or not Bryant ends up earning his way back on the field in that sense. I'm not sure there's going to be much space for him at this point, because I think Nnadi is ultimately going to take, by the end of the year, we might see him taking the majority of the snaps or the plurality of the snaps at that nose tackle position. You know, Christmas also is going to get his reps behind Goldman as well. It's going to be interesting to see what they do also with Ricky Leonard. Who, if I remember correctly, was not on the scout team list, which, you know, did not come out with a scout team jersey, which, you know, also says something about that position.
Him and Featherston, neither of them had scout team jerseys on. Arthur Williams did have a scout team jersey on, But basically what that says to me with Arthur Williams and Keith Bryant being, you know, scout team defensive tackles is that Derek Mitchell and Justin Shanks are ahead of Keith Bryant right now, which is saying an awful lot.
Well, Mitchell is actually at that three or five position. You know, he's not going to play at the nose position that Bryant is, but that does suggest that Shanks is ahead of him, which, like you said, says a lot.
Well, yeah, I mean, Keith Bryant in the spring, he'd been rotating in at the nose tackle and defensive tackle, depending on where Nile was. When Nile got hurt, he took the majority. But it absolutely, you know, Shanks is interesting because they took a chance on him. You don't really expect him to pan out. He was a big body that they took a chance on, and you know, maybe he's coming on, haven't really seen anything in practice from him, but I would have thought that he would have been on the scout team before Keith Bryant was. So that's why it's a little bit surprising there.
Yeah, the other thing that needs to be considered, though, in terms of who's on what on scout teams where and that sort of thing, is also scout teams are very much geared towards the personnel that you're going to be playing that week. So, you know, it's a situation where if you know, a guy like Bryant is running third, but they've got a defensive tackle who kind of matches up with the who matches up pretty well with the what Oklahoma State has at that position, then you're going to want to move him over onto scout team for that week. But he may not be there the whole time. He may not be there the next week, where maybe they've got a guy that matches a little bit more of what you've got from Shanks or Mitchell, and they may move over. This is pretty common for the way that scout teams work, but I do think it's significant that it's not one of the freshmen. And I do think it's significant that you're seeing, I think, you know, it was interesting to hear Jimbo Fisher talk about Mitchell the other day. He was very complimentary. It was a bit surprising how, you know, effuse he was in his praise of Mitchell, given how he's not, you know, the clock's ticking on him at this point. Now, that said, he's had the physical ability. He's just never been able to stay healthy. And he's never really flashed when he's been on the field. But he does have that big body. He's not, you know, carrying bad weight. Be interesting to see if he does produce anything, if he gets any opportunities. He's still, at best, though, he's still running third behind Goldman and Holland. And then you've got Christmas at that position as well. So, I mean, I've got some skepticism on exactly what to expect there, but he is getting, you know, getting his opportunity right now to actually potentially get some snaps. Also the defensive backfield was back to normal for most of the day today. Guys are being pulled back from the injury list. As expected, you know, now that they're starting to prepare, you're starting to see guys like Darby and PJ Williams return back to play. They're obviously going to monitor those guys because, you know, hamstrings are the sorts of things you don't want to play with all that much, because they can nag you all season. But you know, otherwise, I think, you know, basically it's business as usual at this point. And, you know, to make it through camp without a whole lot of injuries, without anything really significant, that's always a major plus. Be interesting to see. Like I said, I'm very curious to see what they do schematically in terms of some of the jumbo stuff. I don't know if there's anything else that you have here. Let's go ahead and get it out, and then we can move forward.
There's really nothing else major that came from today or the past week. Jimbo did mention that John Franklin is now a full-time wide receiver.
Yeah, but that was a matter of time.
Yeah, it was. But he said that he will have some special packages for him at quarterback. I don't know if we ever see those, but you'll see him getting most of his time at wide receiver from now on.
I would expect some of those special packages, if for no other reason than to just give the extra looks and things like that. This is a team that I think they're going to want to actually keep things fresh with some of that stuff. Last year, they basically, they were so vanilla because they didn't have to do anything else. this year they won't probably have to do much else either, but you still have to keep things fresh once you've had that level of success. You want to throw some change-ups in sometimes like that, if for no other reason, just to keep guys fresh and interested and excited about what you're doing. There's only so many times you can run Houston, even if you're scoring every fifth time you run it. There's only so many times you can run it before guys, you know, potentially go through the motions on things. Although they've done extremely well in preventing that so far, there is some level to which you say, you know, well, you know, we're going to keep this little package in. We're going to keep prepping this just a little bit and just make sure we keep things fresh. I would expect to see some of that. It'll be interesting to me to see how much of Franklin we see and when he actually gets on the field. Because he is a guy that Fisher has said privately, you know, off the record, he said that, you know, he could make a whole lot of money out wide. And so we'll see how quickly that transfers to games and how quickly he gets that opportunity as a full time receiver. All right. Well, that should do it for us today. We will return early next week with a couple of fun pieces. We should do our usual piece with the Oklahoma State scout site, and, you know, talk a little bit about what to expect from that game. Wayne and I are also going to talk, going to go through some of our overall season expectations and our bold predictions for the season. But for now, on behalf of Wayne McGahee, I'm Jason Staples. Thank you for listening to the Unconquered Podcast. I made this.